Hello and welcome to another episode of BFRR, our Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock and Roll podcast that explores the intersection of traditional finance, digital assets, and digital currencies, and helps you understand how digital money and assets will evolve in the future. I am co-host Michael Blaschke, and today we dive into the architecture of DLT-based financial market infrastructures. We've covered countless DLT pilots and experiments over the years, but today we're going beyond the headlines, beyond the pilots, beyond the experiments. We're talking about the actual architecture, the foundational blueprint of how DLT-based financial systems need to be built to actually work at scale with real interoperability, proper governance, and genuine market adoption globally. Joining me today is Ivica Aracic, Chief Technology Officer at SWIAT. As a CTO, he is the perfect guest to adopt an architecture perspective or lens or vantage point today. Ivica, you've been with SWIAT since its founding in February 2022, but your DLT journey in traditional finance started much earlier. You spent a decade at Deka Bank as an IT architect, where you were already working on blockchain initiatives back in 2016, quite early for a traditional finance institution. With over 20 years in software engineering, a master's in computer science from Darmstadt, and experience spanning everything from programming, language design, to enterprise application integration, you've witnessed the evolution from theoretical DLT concepts to real production systems. Welcome to Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock and Roll.
Thank you very much, Michael, for the invitation. So I'm very happy to be here. Yeah.
Ivica, looking back at those early blockchain initiatives, for example, at Deka Bank in 2016 versus what you're building at SWIAT today, what's fundamentally changed in how we approach DLT infrastructure for financial markets today in 2025?
Yeah, that's an interesting entry question. Yeah, so yeah, well, the main difference, I would say, is that time, and this is not specific for Deka Bank, but I guess specific for the whole market. It was the phase, or yeah, it started with how we bring things from zero to one. So, which is very typical for, let's say, innovative environments. So you have, let's say, some sort of technology that starts with a promise, and typically it is overhyped. And then you're starting from scratch, like looking how to implement, how to integrate, how to leverage this technology, and to bring benefits for the business. And so it is the question then how you move from zero to one. And then, of course, you make a lot of mistakes here because there are no manuals, no procedures like that you can follow. Of course, you can build on top of your experience, but there are a lot of things that you need to find out. And there are also a lot of dead ends, yeah, which you meet and then need to turn around, go back and retry the other way around. And now being more specific, like for DLT technology. So, I mean, You first need to see how use cases map on this new technology. You need to understand, you need to educate people in your company. You need to make some decisions on like which technology to use. I remember the time on the table, it was like Ethereum, like R3 Corda, like Hyperledger Fabric. And then you need to decide like what is the best technology to pick. Will it survive the next years? Will it survive the next 5 years, next 10 years? And then you come to conclusion, okay, you actually cannot decide that. Yeah. So just start with something and things will develop and stay flexible. And yeah, the other things, especially with DLT, is how do you manage the governance? Yeah? So because you have some sort of shared infrastructure and you start with a use case, typically, and you start with a set of people that meet to do something within this use case. But then a lot of questions also need to be answered in the periphery of that. Like you have a shared infrastructure and how do you govern this? How do you manage this? So there are a lot of things and most people that are listening here, I guess they made the experience by themselves. And now the difference to today after 10 years or as we started with SWIAT, so the initial idea of founding SWIAT was by saying, let's move from one to many now. Yeah. So we have experimented, we tried things out. So we know how to go from zero to one for the most relevant things. And so now let's look how to move from one to many. Yeah, how to do we scale the use case? That's basically the mission of SWIAT, to provide everything needed for the regulated environment, for the regulated institutions, for the regulated financial industry to scale digital asset use cases. And it starts with the infrastructure, but it also continues with, let's say, applications and tokenization and settlement engines and different services which make the access to this infrastructure easier. Yeah, so that's the main difference. And what did not change? The fun. So the fun is, I would say, the same. So it was fun as we started, yeah, and it is still fun today. Different kind of fun, yeah, but still fun.
Yeah, so you mentioned many reasons why I definitely wanted to have you as a guest today. Number one is you worked in the space, particularly in the TradFi space, from the outset of the adoption of DLT, as I explained in your introduction. Then second, you're a CTO and therefore just exactly the right person discussing architecture. And third, you have fun. So it's so important to have guests that really enjoy that work. That's in particular characteristics of professionals in the DLT space. They really enjoy this work because it's an emerging technology, a frontier technology. And that's beyond the technological intricacies and beyond the impact it potentially has, at least on finance. The fun that the professionals have in that space is something I really appreciate. So for those three reasons, I really wanted to have you here. And we opt for adopting an architecture perspective today on DLT-based financial market infrastructure. And the obvious question all now have is, why adopting this architecture lens? And why now? Why didn't we do so 1 year before? Why shouldn't we only do so in potentially 1 year? When I thought about the question, I've observed that we've seen countless DLT pilots, proof of concepts, and sandbox experiments over the past 5 to 7 years. And yet we're still largely in a fragmented landscape in the DLT industry. So why do we need to fundamentally shift how we talk about DLT infrastructure now? Why is it the right time to adopt this architecture lens or have this architecture conversation?
Well, I would say it was always important to talk about this, about the architecture, and because it's some sort of communication. Yeah? So like building a common vocabulary and also making it easier to explain things, because if you have the vocabulary, then you do not like need to explain for days what you mean. You just tell one word, and if people are aligned, then you transport, let's say, strong or complex ideas with single word. So far the last 10 years, I mean, we have kind of some sort of divergence. Yeah? So we experimented with a lot of things. When I say we, I mean the whole market, so not only SWIAT, right? We experimented with a lot of things. We created a lot of, let's say, islands with a lot of interesting things. And this is typical, let's say, for the innovation phase. And even in this innovation phase, I think we also discussed about terminology and architectures, and we learned a lot of along the way. And now I think the market is about to make the curve to convergence and consolidation. Yeah. So after 10 years of experimenting, I think everyone now kind of realizes it works. It works, and everyone kind of realizes we need to consolidate in order to leverage all these, let's say, promised benefits from the DLT technology. And I think everybody has the feeling if we keep it like it is, it was good enough for innovation. It was good enough for pilots. It was good enough to come from zero to one. But if we keep it like this, then we do not have something which is better than status quo. So we just created a lot of friction between these, let's say, different islands that we have. And now we need to start to consolidate. And I think my impression from the last Cybos, it was 2 weeks ago, right? My impression was that the market is making the curve now toward convergence and toward consolidation. And as I said, talking about architecture, so it was always important, but I think now it becomes even more important. It should be emphasized more in order to create even a better shared vocabulary on what we have on a table and to make it easier to consolidate.
Yeah, Ivica, I agree with you that we now need a more structured conversation about both the to be of our DLT-based global financial market, but also about the as-is landscape on a technological level. So with this convergence and consolidation happening, we need a more structured conversation. Yeah. And for this, a shared target architecture and a shared vocabulary would be a powerful means, yeah, to converge, to consolidate, and to develop a global shared understanding of what such a to-be architecture could look like. Ivica, you just outlined that you observe such consolidation and convergence. Can you maybe give one or two examples why you think so, where you observe this? Is it panel conversations? Is it increasing integration via standards? Why do you think this convergence and consolidation is increasingly happening now?
If you look at let's say news landscape, yeah, then you hear more and more about let's say banks coming together and doing things together, and we also kind of contributing to this with regulated layer one to provide a network for European financial industry that would be neutral, would be open, compliance optimized, and also not designed for profit extraction but managed as a shared utility for the benefits of its members, so to say. Yeah. And if you look at CyberSpect, and also SWIFT has announced that they will be doing SWIFT Ledger, which is also a strong push towards consolidation, because someone like SWIFT, it has, let's say, the size and the gravitas to attract a lot of players. And consolidation is also happening like at different levels. Yeah, so you can consolidate regulation, you can consolidate governance, you can consolidate technology. And also the SWIFT announcement is also a very positive thing in regard to consolidating technology itself, yeah, because they endorsed through the announcement Ethereum as technology, which I think is a good thing, yeah, because with technology, there are different flavors, but in the end, none of them is like by many orders of magnitude better than the other. So you could kind of cover, let's say, different use cases with different technologies. And the more important thing is to look what is the ecosystem around the technology. And so from my perspective, it was a good thing that Ethereum is kind of being endorsed in that regard. That's also the other reason is you're also building on top of Ethereum. In this regard, so the market starts to consolidate slowly. And I think everyone kind of experimented enough, yeah, and is realizing that they need to come to larger networks to leverage all the benefits. Yeah,
yeah, really like your idea of zero to one and one to many, and your push for shifting the modus operandi, the mode of working from zero to one. So shifting away from zero to one towards one to many, because the market maturity requires this move from experimentation to implementation now, yeah, and the regulatory clarity is emerging both in Europe and the US, and we need to avoid creating ever more new silos with new technology. And I think the industry is ready for consolidation, but still lacks this common framework without which you cannot build interoperable systems without a shared language. You need that vocabulary that enables coordination globally. You need an architecture that serves then as a communication tool between different stakeholders, and standards that work or standards wouldn't work without definitional clarity. So I really like your push both for moving towards one-to-many and for a shared target architecture as a communication device without which every institution would build incompatible systems.
I also have to say at this point, so it will be difficult to consolidate everything to one single point. So I think this is impossible. Yeah. So from this perspective, there will never be some sort of, let's say, silver bullet, which is kind of giving a blueprint for covering everything. Exactly. So that will not be possible. But still, even if we have it like in, let's say, very simple form, that the parts that we talk about, that we can point with a finger to the same thing, yeah, to let's say some sort of a model or a layer, so that would already be beneficial. What we also observed, for instance, in our discussions within the regulated layer one initiative, So it starts already like with how do I differentiate between a blockchain network, the naked blockchain network, which is basically some sort of execution model for programs. How do I differentiate that from assets that are implemented on it or that are issued on it? And a lot of people mix these things. And this is just a small example on where, let's say, a common vocabulary helps and where it helps to talk about these things. Yeah.
All right. So we've touched a little bit on why adopting such an architecture lens is of value and why we should do right now. Most likely, many of you ask yourselves now, well, what is architecture actually? How should we conceptualize it to actually operationalize it, to work with it? So before we dive into where we actually are and where we need to go as a community architecturally, let's establish a common framework. And for this, the IMF published a working paper in 2024 introducing the ASAP or ASAP model, which stands for Access, Service, Asset, and Platform. And this is becoming, to me, an important reference point for thinking about digital asset infrastructure. It's a four-layer conceptual model for organizing functions in digital asset platforms or in digital asset infrastructure. It's similar to how TCP/IP layered model enabled the internet or interoperability in the internet. And each layer of the ASAP model has a distinct purpose and governance, and it helps understand the separation of concerns in DLT systems. I will briefly define these four layers, and it will serve super useful in further discussing how as-is and to-be architectures ought to look like in the financial market infrastructure. So going through this four layers, bottom to top, first there's the platform layer. This is the foundational infrastructure level. So this is about runtime capabilities, execution engines, storage, ledger, communication between nodes, consensus mechanisms, identification, authentication, authorization, basically the quote-unquote operating system of the DLT infrastructure. And most technically sophisticated, but also most diverse across implementations. Then second, there is the asset layer. This is where tokenization happens. So it's the functions that define assets. It's core functions like state representation, issuance, transfer, redemption, access control. And the separation from the platform layer is key, because the innovation is the tokenization. So it enables independent governance of assets from the platform operators. The same platform can host multiple independently governed assets. Third, there is the service layer. This is where things get interesting for financial markets. It's about the functions that manipulate or use assets. Here I'm really thinking of payments, foreign exchange, lending, collateralization. So where most financial innovation happens. And fourth, ultimately, there is the access layer, the user-facing layer. This layer is about how participants interact with underlying layers. Here I'm thinking of wallets, APIs, portals, applications, the presentation and formatting, credential management, data exchange. So where user experience really happens. So Ivica, I hope you're satisfied with my explanation of the model. If not, shoot and revise.
No, absolutely. So all correct. Yeah. So no additions to it. And but it's also important to emphasize it is one of many models that are possible. What I like about this model is it is easy to understand. Yeah, it is easy to understand. So it is composed of these four layers, and it helps already a lot, yeah, to sort things in, yeah. And one also, yeah, let's say things where we always need to be cautious is, no matter which model you choose, there are always like some angles which are not covering all edge cases. But I would say this model is good enough for discussion. Yeah.
Lovely. With that, we've established why the architecture vantage point is precious. We've briefly introduced this ASAP model to, at least for this episode, define what we actually mean when talking about architecture. And with that, let's shoot and dive into what we as a global community have achieved so far. So let's map today's reality of DLT-based financial market infrastructures to the model we just introduced. So now that we have this framework, let's use it to map where, at least in Europe, we actually stand today. Let's go through each layer and assess what we've genuinely achieved versus what's still aspiration. And let's start again on the bottom, the platform layer and its current state. So what do you think have we actually achieved at the platform layer, at least in European financial markets today?
Yeah, I would start with positive things, and then I think about gaps we will talk then following this. So on the platform layer, so what we have achieved is, and in my view that I'm presenting here is very much TradFi, so I apologize for that. So it's not globally, like including all, let's say, also crypto cryptocurrencies and things. I'm talking from TradFi perspective, which means supporting assets that are regulated and that the banks can take into their books easily. And talking about platform layer, so the good news is technology is working. Yeah, so technology is working, and many thanks to public permissionless setting, because it is a huge, let's say, innovation jungle that we have there, yeah, and where we can get a lot of inspiration how things can work or should work. And we can really, let's say, take a lot of out of this pool and tailor that for TradFi environment. Yeah. So especially emphasizing here Ethereum from my perspective. And so this layer works. Yeah. So and there is also a lot of confidence built up. Yeah. That that it is not only like just working for one day. Yeah. But that it will also continue to work with coming years, based on, let's say, the confidence that has been built up over a decade plus. Yeah. And so that's about the platform layer. And about the asset layer, so that would be the next one, building on top of it. In financial industry, everything revolves around assets. Yeah. So this is, let's say, the reason why we are building actually platforms, in order to manage assets in some way. And if it talking about assets, and then the first thing is, how do I issue these? How do I bring them to life? How they are created or minted or issued? So depending on which terminology you use. And the next thing is, how do I change the ownership over these assets? And now we have multiple perspectives. So one perspective is technological perspective. So you need some sort of a software, typically called tokenization engine software, which is able to create assets on blockchain. And the other perspective is the regulatory perspective. Yeah? So you also need the corresponding regulation, yeah, in order to bring these assets and to claim the same, let's say, financial instrument properties that you're eventually used from a TradFi environment. Yeah? For instance, if you issue a bond, so a bond on a paper and a bond on blockchain should be basically the same things. And if you think back some years ago, so this was not that easy. I mean, we had things like registered bonds. There were very early experiments on it. But for instance, bearer bonds, yeah. So it was first possible with the introduction of EBPG, so Electronic Securities Act, for instance, in Germany. Yeah. And so the good news here is that as well technology and as well regulation have significantly progressed recently or in the last years, and we are able to issue and to manage ownership of assets, and we are also able to issue not only like cryptocurrencies or tokens, but also regulated instruments that TradFi is used from the daily business, like bonds, for instance, yeah, or like fund shares. And also important to mention here, when we talk about tokenization engines, so the current state of the art is you have basically two steps. So the first step is to describe an instrument. So you need to say which properties this instrument has from the financial perspective. And the second thing is that you need to open some sort of a registry, or the other synonym for that is token, yeah, to open some sort of let's say, bookkeeping for this instrument in form of a token or in form of a registry, depending on which terminology here again you're using. And we have different formats here. And yeah, well, the good news is formats exist to run this software and to open these registries and bookkeeping. But it's still in a very fragmented state, where dominant formats have been evolved, so to say. Every time when somebody comes in and says, "I have a standard," then you can add +1 to the existing standards, and then in the end, you have, instead of 15, you have 16 standards, which is of course not the goal of this thing. But at least at investor side, a standard has emerged, which is called in Ethereum world ERC-20, which is covering the investor side. And I think standardization on investor side is also the most important thing to cover, yeah, because typically on the issuer and registrar side, you typically have one entity which is handling everything, but on investor side, the hands can change very quickly, and consolidation of the interface is very important. I think for this reason, source ERC-20 as a standard, very popular in the Ethereum world to cover the investor side, like to say, what is my balance and how do I transfer things? And now going to one layer higher, so to the service layer, then we come to things like secondary market, trading, and we have to more complex, let's say, delivery protocols. Yeah, because once you have a token, you can say, okay, I have a token, I have a bookkeeping for it, I have some beneficial owner, now I can transfer to someone else. But the reality in the financial industry is much more complex than that. You need much more, complex protocols. You need something like delivery versus delivery, things happening in the same transaction, or delivery versus payment, if a payment lag is involved in this regard. And for this, you need 10 additional services, yeah, so to manage these deliveries. To say, for instance, I'm giving a collateral for HQLA instrument, yeah, or I'm issuing this instrument and I want to get paid in central bank money. And as soon as assets are being on the same ledger, so this is of course easier, but this is also again not a typical case, because assets are kind of scattered across different ledgers, be it decentralized, be it centralized. For instance, if we look at central bank money, then the central bank money reserves are sitting in RTGS, which is also some sort of a ledger managed centrally, and the digital assets are sitting on DLT. Yeah? And now on the service layer, you have the challenge also to do something which is called cross-ledger delivery versus payment. You need to be able to synchronize these things. And a few years ago, so it was like dreaming how to do it, yeah, with central bank money especially. But now we have concrete plans to get it implemented for Euro within the Pontes track, yeah, so during the next year, which is a very positive news, yeah, to get all features complete, yeah, in regard to settlement, yeah. And we also had last year a very successful exploratory phase from Eurosystem, so where it was possible also to link movements on DLT with payment in central bank money. Yeah. And we also participated in these. And one prominent example of this is the Siemens bond from the last year, 300 million. That has been settled, delivery versus payment. So delivery owns via blockchain versus payment with central bank. What I want to say here, so having the payment lag for more complex delivery protocols on the service layer is a very important thing. And we are about to complete it and have it in production very soon through Pontes track, at least in Europe. And the other thing is to have secondary markets. Yeah, so this is currently we are issuing things, but secondary market is still in experimentation phase. And I think with the pilot regime, so this will improve so that we also have the secondary market covered on the service layer. And the last bit that we need to meet, but I think we will not have very soon, is eligibility of the assets. So in the beginning, I said a bond should be a bond, so independently of if it is on DLT or not, but currently things on DLT are second-class citizens, especially from the perspective of eligibility. For instance, if you go to a central bank, then you cannot kind of get liquidity, give this as collateral and get liquidity for it, because it is not included in a, eligibility framework.
And with eligibility, you're still on the service layer's current state.
That would be, exactly. That would be part of the service layer, exactly. So the service is like, deliver me a collateral and I give you liquidity in the form of central money. So.
Yes.
And looking at the access layer, well, the access layer is something which follows the services and assets that are available. Yeah? And especially in an earlier phase, people do not want to invest a lot of resources to install all these things on site on their own. Yeah? So they want to kind of buy, let's say, easy access services, to get onto the platform and to get into the assets and then decide eventually later to do own deployments and scale deployments on their own premise. So from perspective of this layer, I think we are pretty well covered in the regard, but it follows basically asset and service and platform layer, that so all these things that are happening down below. That would be like status quo summarized, mapped onto these architectural layers.
Davica, thank you for your comprehensive and honest assessment across all layers, acknowledging both progress and gaps. I also liked your disclaimer or context specification that we are talking predominantly about the European perspective here, and predominantly about TradFi. So this is by no means a complete coverage entailing DeFi and CeFi, but this is really the target architecture of TradFi when it comes to DLT. Yeah, and I carefully listened, of course, and to me, some aspects stood out. On the platform layer, you stressed that multiple DLT infrastructures are deployed. I'm thinking of Corda, Hyperledger, private Ethereum instances, but also proprietary solutions. But there's a high diversity with limited convergence so far. And of course, and we need to talk about that later, there is now SWIAT's regulated layer one, and it's well positioned here. We're going to talk about it later. Regarding the asset layer, you stressed various tokenized assets that already exist, like bonds, securities, deposits, stablecoins. There is minimal standardization. So even money assets, where you would expect most standardization, show significant diversity in their implementation. And most assets are platform specific with limited portability. And there's a need for asset information standards. So that was essentially my highlight when you described the SS of the asset layer. Please correct me here if that would not be your highlight.
So the landscape is fragmented, yeah. So definitely in its description and also in its connectability between these different assets. There is one thing which I really would feel comfortable calling a standard, namely this ERC-20 token standard that we have, but it is only covering like a very narrow interface, which is already good enough. And I think it's focusing on investor side, which is also important. And everything else is like proposal for a standard, I would say. And the time will show who has, let's say, the gravitas, so to say, to proclaim it indeed as a standard.
Yeah. Yeah, then moving to my highlights of all your points within the service layer would be that simple TradFi services are operational, so like basic asset transfers, but the more complex cross-platform services like atomic delivery versus payment or cross-border settlement is still largely experimental. And also there, a lack of standardized protocols means that, let's say, institution A's delivery versus payment can't interoperate with institution B's without bilateral manual work, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So it is, when we look at, I said at the service layer, we need to provide something like delivery versus payment protocols and delivery versus delivery protocols, because the requirements that we have from the business require for this, like exchanging collateral for security or in repurchase agreements, like security for cash or during an issuance of a bond, like the bond for the cash. Yeah, so they are much more complex protocol than just like transferring ownership from A to B. So in a very simple case. And I think in this regard, so we have so far no standardization at all, how these protocols, which interface they should follow. Of course, it's wired. We have a solution at some other location. You will also find another solution, but then you need kind of to build adapters to each of them individually. So I think it will need to consolidate in some regard. If you just look at the payment, at the cash side. For central bank money, we are getting some sort of interoperability interface. Then with stable coins, we most probably can expect to have it in form of ERC-20 token then again, which of course makes it a little bit easier. Then with tokenized deposits, you could lend with something else. And as you can see here, they have different kind of interface how to access them, and it's not consolidated yet, and it will take some time, I'm expecting.
Yeah, then my summary of your access layer arguments would be that there is some maturity from leveraging existing standards, but still a fragmented wallet landscape. I would say that institutional access is more developed so far than retail access, and the user experience is still too complex for mainstream adoption on the access layer.
This is a very interesting point, because if you think big from the perspective of going to mainstream, then I would claim, and I guess I would have a few fans here, that 85% of the people do not care about wallets, about blockchain, about tokens. Yeah, they care rather about having a specific asset with a specific property in their portfolio, and this portfolio should not be required to access this portfolio, should not be required to open another channel to someone else. Ideally, they want to get it served via the existing channels. Of course, I have this TradFi perspective, but I think decentralization is good, and we should have this option, but people are actually looking for comfortable centralized services on decentralized infrastructure. And then if we look again at the TradFi environment, then we come back to custodians that are offering the post to their customers, a bit corporates, bit retail, bit other institutions. Looking now at this access layer again, then I think custodians will play here a significant role, just simply for the reason of efficiency and for the reason of comfort for the users.
Yeah, now I undertake the bold attempt to draw an overall picture, overall assessment of the as-is architecture of the DLT-based financial market infrastructure. And I hopefully convince you. My overall assessment would be that the technical foundations do exist, and some production systems are operational, but real global interoperability across platforms and institutions is still on an aspirational level. And to me, the critical gap is and remains standardization, particularly at the asset and the service layers, which currently prevent the network effects that are needed for a genuine global transformation of TradFi using blockchain. So did I convince you, or would you draw an additional overall picture?
I would say yes, but this is already like a second step from my perspective. And if you look at the model again, it starts with the platform. I think we need to start at the lowest level possible to consolidate. And lowest level possible to consolidate is like technology and like networks. And the reason why I'm saying this is, if you look so in the past, then the reason the different standards quasi-standards come out is that people are not able to meet at the same place. Yeah, so they are like meeting in two different places, and then they figure out how to do things, and then they call it their standard. And if we are able to kind of, and again, looking from perspective of TradFi, if we're able to bring more and more players to more and more consolidated places that they meet, then we're also increasing like the chance to come to common standards at a higher level. And so for this reason, we need to start at the bottom and then work step by step up. But of course, things are happening also in parallel. It's not like a strict sequential process. But what I'm saying, we need to consolidate, we need to standardize, but we should always keep the scope small and start at the foundational layer and then move up. And that's also what motivated us to kind of start first with regulatory layer one as a blockchain where European financial institutions can meet under a credible neutral governance umbrella. Then first bring the use cases to it and at least consolidate this, let's say, executional layer, which is actually not contributing to competitive differentiation. And so they consolidate it in a cooperative for the benefit of all the members. And then they have a roof under which they can meet to discuss the other things and start consolidating then at asset and service layer.
So it's so far we've looked at the as is, the present, the current state of DLT-based financial market infrastructure, at least in Europe, at least in TradFi. We've mapped the as is across the four layers of the ASAP model. But now let's move to the even harder question, that is, what should the to-be architecture look like for European DLT-based financial market infrastructures, maybe in 3 to 5 years? What are the critical architectural decisions that need to be made now to get us to this aspired target state?
So we covered already a few topics because we kind of drifted from East state to what should be done. Yeah? So and one thing is we should see that we support this movement to convergence to let's say, few consolidated platforms that we can bring assets on, because without this, it will be too fragmented. And every link between two platforms or two systems is introducing friction. And this friction, if it stays like it is right now, then it will definitely not be able to compete against the status quo. That's a very important thing. And now the question is, and again, from TradFi perspective, how do we govern such shared infrastructure? How do we introduce governance of it so that people are not afraid that it is some sort of profit extraction model, and when they go in, then let's say, then the profits are extracted out of these people and they are locked in. So with regulated layer one, we kind of tried to provide an answer to that. But it's of course one of possible initiatives. And the second thing that needs to happen, we need to complete these missing parts, yet now independently on which layer they are from an architectural point of view, but we need to complete these missing puzzle pieces for the whole product for financial market infrastructure. What is missing is really having a payment leg, which is scaled for different kinds of money, like for commercial bank money, for stable coin, for deposits, for central bank money. But this is now coming, and I'm pretty confident that we will solve it. Yeah? So if you look, for instance, at central bank money, yeah? So in Q3 2026, so it was promised to have this in production connectable via interoperability solution, yeah? So which is already a good thing, covering real pain points. So payments, we need payments, yeah, of different kinds, and it need to be scaled. So currently, we're still kind of in very early phase. From the perspective of TradFi. And the second thing is we are now so very busy with issuing things, but then they get stuck because they cannot be traded on a secondary market. And the pilot
you mean issuing tokenized assets?
Exactly, securities, tokenized securities, exactly, issuing these. But of course, we ourselves did already some secondary market trades, but it is not at a scale level yet. Yeah, so this is something which is upcoming now, driven by pilot regime. And this needs to be solved, because without a secondary market, a lot of these things does not make sense, because having a bearer bond that is initially issued and then you're sitting on it and cannot trade it and also cannot give it as collateral for gaining liquidity, then you're at a dead end. This is something that needs to be solved, and I'm also very much confident that it will be solved. It is already on the way. And the last thing is what we need to solve is we need to make these assets that are from the purely looking at them as financial instruments, which are known already in a TradFi, but due to the fact that they're sitting on DLT, they are some sort of second-class citizen because they are not included in eligibility frameworks. And the most prominent discussion is eligibility at ECB, that you deliver this as collateral and can get liquidity. And this is something which is also in discussion, but I'm assuming it will take 2 to 3 years, so my personal estimate, so to say, on that, yeah. And when we get these things together, then I would say we have completed the puzzle, and then the time is where things can really take off.
Yeah, I really like the completing the puzzle analogy or perspective. That's what we have architects for, to make the puzzle pieces fit together in an effective way. Ivica, one of the reasons why I wanted to discuss the topic with you is that you're not only a CTO, but you're a CTO of a company that contributes across the four layers outlined here. So let's now be specific about Tuiat's positioning using the framework again, and going layer by layer, what does Tuiat contribute, and how, and what do you see other players' responsibilities? Maybe we can structure it by first focusing on the platform layer and focus on regulated layer one, and then look at the other three layers, that is asset, service, and access layers, which from my perspective is Tuiat's actual right to play in this architecture.
The interesting thing is, as we started actually at service layer. So, I mean, we did not realize that, not at Tuiat, but looking back at 2016, yeah, so at Deka Bank, we did not realize that time that we started at service layer, but what we soon realized is that we always, all the time needed to dig deeper and solve problems on layers below, yeah, in order to be able to run these use cases. And then we finally came to founding Tuiat in 2022 to cover everything end to end. And starting at the lowest layer, so platform, so we created a permissioned Ethereum network. And the reason why it is permissioned is because only in a permissioned network, so that's our hypothesis, is that you can clearly define who's responsible for what. And if you can define this, then you have much easier work for regulated entities to do risk assessment and risk management, because the basic, requirement to do it is to know who's responsible for what. Yeah, and that was the reason why we created permission, why we created the contractual framework describing explicitly these roles and responsibilities and connections, and also installing a governance around it. And as we started as GmbH, so which is a limited in Germany. And we were aware of the fact that GmbH or limited is not a credibly neutral entity, because the next day they could change the terms and conditions and then suddenly different rules apply. But we are now at the point where we have shown that it works, where we have taken innovation risks, and we have already productive cases on it, so which gives people confidence that banks can integrate with such an environment and also bring assets to such an environment. And now we're carving this part completely out and bringing this within the regulated layer one initiative to a European cooperative, which is a credibly neutral entity that we want to design to manage this, shared transactional platform in the form of a blockchain. So that's our contribution number one at platform layer. And then on top of this platform layer, said in the beginning, everything revolves around assets. Yeah, so you need software which is able to describe these assets and which is able to run bookkeeping on these assets in the form of a token on blockchain. And from our perspective, we are covering there everything which is kind of needed by regulated entities, like covering tokens which are compatible with Electronic Securities Act, for instance, here in Germany, or compatible with the pilot regime. But we are also aware of the fact that depending on your needs, eventually you need different formats. Yeah, so there is no one token to rule them all, yeah, or a silver bullet which kind of solves all problems. So we're keeping this as open extension point from the architectural point of view. And depending on use case drives that we have, yeah, so we are always ready at all time to implement a new, let's say, token format in this regard. So this is our tokenization engine. And now going to the service layer, so with what we are offering there is basically two things here. So the first thing is we are offering a delivery engine, which is able to assemble more complex delivery protocols, which I mentioned, like delivery versus delivery or delivery versus payment. And this can happen with assets within the same ledger, but it is also able to connect with other ledgers sitting outside, let's say, of Swire domain. And in this regard, it does not matter actually if they're centralized or decentralized. So ledger is a ledger, basically. So centralized or decentralized is a question of operations, how you run it and who's responsible for it. So what we did so far is to integrate with Eurosystem during the trials last year. And we will also implement with Pontes, which is, let's say, the new track that ECB started for bringing the payment leg into scale production. And we also implemented with JP Morgan Kinexys for tokenized deposits for what formerly was called JP Morgan Coin. And as you can see here, we are also keeping this as extension point because right now we cannot kind of say what in sum we need, so we need to keep it open. And as always, so we are use case driven. So if our customers have a requirement, then we would add another payment leg type implementation to support then this case in a delivery protocol. And the final thing is on the access layer, we are aware of the fact that we have a decentralized network and we always give the option to our customers to deploy a node on their own side. But in the current phase where people are still kind of going over the verge, so it's much more easier to have complete packages that can be booked and later migrated on site. And so for this purpose, we are providing also simple, let's say, access products, which make it easy to get into the system. And it's especially easy for custodians to join or TradFi institutions to join the network with low effort. So that's basically our contribution mapped to the four layers that you mentioned.
Yeah, thanks for guiding me through Swire's contribution across those four layers. One observation is that first and foremost, it's interesting to see a DLT player play on all four levels at the same time, particularly on the infrastructure level, which is rather a super competitive layer. And if the Swire play on the infrastructure layer plays out, works, then it'll be super promising for Swire because infrastructure is power. Yeah, if you really contribute on or are successful on the infrastructure layer, it gives a lot of power to influence the space.
The interesting thing here, Michael, is that we're not doing it for power. So, and this is not typical, so as your explanation kind of reflected. So actually, we did not want to do it, to be very honest. It would be much better for us if somebody else had solved this problem, but since nobody solved it and we wanted to go for scaling, then we said, okay, we are going to touch this. And now we want to kind of package it in a way that it gets even more open for, let's say, a larger set of people, especially targeting European financial industry. So that's we do not see it as a competitive, contributing to competitive differentiation, but rather something which everybody should profit from, and then competition happens on top of it at asset and service layer and access layer.
Yeah. Ivica, to close our very interview, let's do what architects can do best, that is look at the long game, lower our time preference. So looking 10 years out, do you think we'll have successfully built a genuinely new generation of financial market infrastructure on DLT, or will DLT end up being a back-end optimization technology to existing systems that look largely the same from the outside? What do you think?
So what I would say is we are successful when nobody's talking about DLT and wallets and private keys and everything is like hidden under the hood. And just like you do not talk about JavaScript and HTML in your browser, you just go to the website and use it. So I think that's a measure of success. And I also think we have that there is such a velocity when you're like for a decade in an area and you still see a lot of energy, and you yourself have still a lot of energy to push things forward, then things are in motion. So they will come to a point where all these promises are realized, especially now looking at all these, let's say, aspects that need to be covered, all these puzzle pieces that need to be collected. So a lot of very smart people are across the globe on the way for building these puzzle pieces and bringing them together. And I'm fully convinced that it will happen. And having 10, 20 years for adoption of such a huge change is nothing, actually. So I'm counting in decades and not in months, to be honest. So I'm now for 10 years already in, and I'm investing at least 5 more years, you know, for this.
Yeah, really good point. I mean, all this conversation only started with the emergence of Bitcoin in the first place. So this is still a super young technology. And for an emerging technology to now have conversations about the long-term impact on financial market infrastructure is actually fast, right? So if you had told me at the inception of Bitcoin or only 5 years ago that architects would have such a conversation today, I would have smiled probably. Yeah, but here
absolutely.
We are.
Absolutely. If you look back, you see that we have climbed Mount Everest. But if you look forward, you see another Mount Everest to climb. So, but yeah, you should not stop.
Yeah, so I appreciate your hopeful but realistic long-term vision. I believe genuine transformation is possible, but we need to acknowledge the path dependencies and the challenges we observe on a daily basis. And I think the importance of getting architecture today, right now, is one of the key levers to enable that very transformation all the DLT practitioners in the space have.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and architecture, including not only technology, but also the legal, contractual, and regulatory part.
Yeah. Ivica, this has been a masterclass in thinking about DLT infrastructure beyond the hype cycle and all the pilot announcements and pilot implementations we observe on a daily basis in the news. I think the architecture lens gives us more clearer way to understand where we are, where we need to go, and what needs to be done and who needs to do what. Yeah. So thank you for bringing such technical depth and practical experience to this architecture conversation. And to our audience, thanks for listening to Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock and Roll. Thanks, Ivica, for your insights and for helping us map the architecture of Europe's emerging DLT-based financial infrastructure. Do connect with us on YouTube, LinkedIn, and our expert community on Telegram, both in German and English. For details, check the show notes. And by the way, Ivica is a engaged member in both channels, English and German. So if you do have questions to Ivica, drop them there. I hope, Ivica, you'll then be happy to answer some of the questions. And also... Excellent. And also visit our website, bfrr.com, for more detailed analysis and complete show notes from this episode, including links to the IMF ASAP model paper. Make sure to subscribe to BFRR wherever you get your podcasts, and join us next week when we'll be exploring another critical development in digital finance. Until then, this is Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock and Roll, bringing Europe's perspective on digital assets to the world. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Michael.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.